This is In Focus, featuring interviews with our local newsmakers, information on community programs and politics, and the story on local current events. In Focus on Lake 88.
And good afternoon. Brian Perkin in for Bob Perot today for this edition of In Focus on Lake 88.1. And as it is Wednesday, we have our Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit with us once again, Dr. Paula Stewart. And welcome, Dr. Stewart. Good to have you with us today.
Yes. Oh, I miss these interviews. So it's really good to be back.
Well, that's good. And it's good things that, things aren't as in dire straits as they have been for the last 2 years, but still very, very happy to talk to you. And I know Bob Perot would have liked to have been here, but called off an assignment today. So you're stuck with me. So
I'm happy to be stuck with you.
There you go. Dr. Stewart, we're going to talk about a little bit about some of the changes in public health over the years. But before we start that, we should actually note that we have the health unit celebrating 75 years in existence, and that's coming up this July. And it's kind of interesting because we've had access centers that have come and gone. We've had LHINs that may be with us or not, depending on the political party of the day. But the health unit has been there for years. And 75 years, it's kind of, I guess, maybe crept up in a lot of people.
It's so true. Some people sort of say that you don't know about public health until something bad happens, because so much of our work is about prevention. And so you hear about it when there's an outbreak at a school, but you don't hear about when we do all those immunization programs and make sure the kids are up to date with immunization and stuff. And you don't hear about all the work the public health inspectors do with restaurants and beaches and stuff. Well, beaches, people know more about actually because we post the beaches. But yeah, so it's actually been delightful to be to have been so long in public health. I will not say how long, a very long time. And even to see changes within my working time. And then when I think back to the sort of the 1800s and really the start of public health, it's really changed. And, you know, I think that is the fundamental part of public health, because it's about the public part. And as things change with the public, then public health has to change along with it. And as we have more science about what's happening in the public, more information about health and disease and injury, then we respond and change as well. And that's been so true in when you think about the last 2.5 years and the role of public health. So it's in our DNA, I think, when we work in public health, to expect that things will change. And so you need to constantly be up to date on what's happening within the community, within the public, and how we can help.
And when you think about, the role of public health over the years, a lot of things that we take advantage of and just kind of assume that clean water will be taken care of. We assume that, different vaccines will be available. When, you're back in the 18, 1900s, we were talking about things like getting clean drinking water, making
yes.
sewage systems working, and all these things. They were very, basic needs, but they still hadn't been met. We were kind of being, I don't want to say out of the dark ages, but it was something that public health had not really been asked to do before, and kind of that was how it kind of, I guess, germinated back then.
Really, that's exactly right. So cholera was a really serious health problem, with people dying from cholera. And it's, we all speak about John Snow in the 1850s, when he was a physician and was noticing that there was a cluster of people dying in a particular part of the of London. And so he went out to identify what was in common about those people. And that's like the basis of epidemiology, which is a basic science of public health. And he found that all the people who were using a particular pump on Broad Street, those are the ones that were getting sick, and people who were using a different pump, because they didn't have water pumped into the homes, were not getting sick. And if the people from that area were getting sick, it's because they had used the pump in Broad Street. So at that point in time, it was thought that infection kind of was just in the air, like a miasma or something. There wasn't, their germ theory hadn't been really pushed very hard. And so it was an innovative thing, that to stop the cholera outbreak, he took the handle off the pump. And so that was, we all talked about that as the sort of the first public health intervention. Wikipedia has a lovely story about it, and including some of his quotes from medical articles and stuff. And so that was really the start. And that, you're right, even when public health was being formed more formally in the 1900s, it was around safe water and safe sewage handling and so on. So municipalities were involved in this right from the beginning and still are now. And you're right, it was the infectious diseases. Like my grandmother used to talk about her brother who was 12, the only boy in the family, and you can understand the significance of that in the early 1900s. And he had fallen off a fence and gotten a stick in his leg and died from tetanus. We that doesn't happen anymore. And when you think about, so sort of the 1900s to the 1950s, I think, in public health were really about understanding way more about infectious disease, how it spread, the role of the environment, the role of person-to-person spread, and then vaccines. And tetanus was developed in the 20s, which was just 10 years too late for Wallace, her brother. And then diphtheria, and so many young children died of diphtheria. Like whole families with children could be wiped out with diphtheria. And then and pertussis, whooping cough that killed little babies, was 1948 for new vaccine. And then I remember my mom talking about the polio epidemic that happened in the 50s. And I have a cousin who has one leg shorter than the other and post-polio syndrome. And that really pushed the, so much work had been done with vaccines in the 30s and the 40s. And in 50s, there was a real breakthrough in terms of how they're done. So when you think that was the infectious disease era of public health, I think the 1900s, really aggressively understanding more about how infection was spread, and then vaccine and measles, mumps and rubella. Like when you think of how if you speak to your grandparents and about what life was like for them when they were younger, it's so different now. Our children are safe because we have vaccines for them. And then what was really interesting, so this is in my lifetime, in the 70s and 80s, once we had the vaccines, and TB killed so many people, and we have the Ottawa Sanatorium, like that was in the 20s, 30s and 40s, and then we had the BCG, and we recognized that TB was being spread by people being in close quarters with each other, because it's not spread very easily. But if people are all living in the same place, it's spread easily. And so gradually, as we understood the environmental component of infectious disease, then we did things which made it less risky. It's still a huge big issue with many First Nations communities because of housing and so on. Mm-hmm. But once the huge emphasis on infectious disease was, okay, we kind of got a handle on this now, just like we use all those same basic principles with our COVID response, then people recognize, okay, the thing that's killing people now is actually lung cancer. And so that was the recognition that smoking was a serious cause of lung cancer. And then they looked at, oh yeah, and heart disease is really high as well. And smoking was important for that, and diet and so on. So the 70s and 80s, which is when I was practicing into the latter part of the 80s, the shift had, so environmental health was still really important, infectious disease really important, child development became even more important, it started in the 50s and 60s, and then the whole focus on chronic disease, smoking and so on. And that there's a sentinel paper if people are really interested. In 1986, there was the World Health Organization Ottawa Charter on Health Promotion. And that, up until then, public health has sort of been telling people what to do. My mom tells a story about when she had her first baby in Montreal. She was not allowed to bathe the baby until the public health nurse came, watched her learn how to bathe the baby under the nurse's supervision. And public health had kind of been like that, which kind of worked when you need to remove a handle of a pump where it's adverse water. But it didn't work so well for the behaviors like smoking and being physically active and eating healthy food. So public health really had to change its whole approach to public health to look at the public as partners in promoting health and preventing disease and injury. And this document, the Ottawa Charter, which is so exciting, this was used internationally, was actually formed in Ottawa because we had a really aggressive Health Canada department at that time that was really at the leading edge of thinking about how do we help people adopt healthy behaviors. And the critical sentinel thing about it is that they said health is more than the absence of disease. And health is the ability to realize aspirations, satisfy needs, and cope with the changing environment. And so you, the messaging, is, you can see, has just totally changed. And then we've gone from there to the heart health programs and real focus on health equity, healthy schools. And now really in the 2000s, I would say really recognizing the effect of globalization on public health, and the pandemic is a good example. So it's been, it's quite a story. And I think the underlying part of all of it is a constant desire to help the public be healthy. And as we've learned more, then we do it in different ways. It's a good story. And I've absolutely been thrilled to be part of it.
Yeah. And at times it's reshaping or changing public perception or public consciousness over things. You kind of mentioned about in the 50s and the 60s, a lot of emphasis was on child development. So the newborns, you know, mothers and the rest of it. I mean, at one point there were books out, I think it was it a Dr. Spock that was saying,
yes,
don't breastfeed your child, right? So a lot of people read these books and weren't breastfeeding. And of course, subsequently, we know that, you know, the meconium and the rest of it, that's the best thing you can do is breastfeed your child, passing yes. along all those, you know, different,
the
you know,
antibodies yeah. and all everything.
Yeah. yeah. So yeah. you had to have to deal with it, even in the pandemic that we had as well. Just, you know, the question of, you know, should you get vaccinated or not? Right. That question is there as well. You're always looking at there's always a portion of the population that maybe is believing something else. And it's an education component.
Yeah, yeah. Really, Brian, really good point. And there's always misinformation. So Dr. Spock was on, that was definitely misinformation. But I know my mother had that, the big book that was Dr. Spock was telling people how to raise their children. And that has really changed. I would never tell people that I know better than they are about how they're going to raise their children. I will absolutely share the science and share information with people. But that's really a very good example of the switch that's happened.
Mm-hmm, that's for sure. Now, the 75th anniversary, are there any special events or celebrations or projects that are planned to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the Health Unit?
So we should. I think we should for sure. It's crept up on us. Sue Healy, who's our communications coordinator, and she keeps track of all these things, sent me an email a couple of weeks ago. And I thought, oh my gosh, like that's amazing. So yes, we will plan something. Now that things have really settled down about COVID and we're not constantly changing and pivoting and adjusting, we'll look at what we can do, because it is... like 75 years is a long time, and a long time of many, many people providing service to the community.
Yeah.
Pretty yeah. wonderful.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on, if we could, Dr. Stewart, with our Ask Dr. Stewart section. And we've got a number of questions here, about six or so today. So if you don't mind, we're going to put some questions. We're nice to have you back with us. So we're going to put some questions that have been forwarded by our listeners. The first one is, I have a question about school in September. My kids have done virtual learning from home for the last 2 years, and I have to make a decision soon about which mode of learning they will do next year. My kids were double vaccinated last summer, but I'm worried about their protection, and maybe it's waning now. I'm wondering how safe you feel the schools will be come the fall. Dr. Kieran Moore has mentioned his concern with the BA4 and the BA5 and another COVID wave in the fall possibly, and I'm wondering if you share his concern. That's the question.
Yeah. So really, really good question. I think there are a lot of parents who are asking the same question. I think that we should assume that there will be more variants, and that we talk about living alongside COVID. I think the COVID virus will change. And I think as long as we have, we live in a global world, and as long as there are countries where we don't have high levels of vaccine, then the virus will continue to change. And the good thing is that we know the precautions that we can put in place to be able to reduce the risk that we are going to be exposed to it. And we know that the close contact if you're in a room where there are a lot of people and you don't have good ventilation, the virus is there, can spread. Like, we know all those things right now. So I think you should assume that we will have COVID. I think you, in a possible exposure to COVID, I will not say you should have COVID. There is a possible exposure to COVID. And I think the reason Kieran's talking about the fall is that's when respiratory season starts. It's just the way it is with rhinoviruses and influenza and so on.
Right.
And
okay.
Part of that is because the virus, when it leaves our nose and throats now where the air is so moist, then it actually picks up moisture and falls to the ground quickly. Whereas in the fall and the winter with the colder weather, then when the virus leaves our nose and throat with moisture on it, the moisture is picked up by the air so it can hang in the air longer. So that's just a reality. In terms of school, I think that it's really important to think not so much about COVID when you're thinking about school, is what experiences does your child need for healthy growth and development? Social development, social interaction is incredibly important for children. And being outside of the home and in situations where they need to problem solve, deal with conflict, figure out how to make friends, have delight and joy in experiences with others is really important. So I think that's the first thing you need to think about with your children, is how are you going to give them the opportunities for growth and development that are so critical while the brain is changing so quickly during childhood and adolescence. And then thinking in terms of what protective measures that you would like to put in place, being vaccinated is really important. Children seem to be holding their vaccine, their immunity levels longer than adults, which isn't surprising. Their immune systems are all ramped up because they have to deal with so many things. So I wouldn't discount the vaccine. I expect that we will be doing a vaccination in the fall. Both Pfizer and Moderna are looking at a vaccine that has both the Omicron variant, that part of the spike protein that's really important because it goes into the cell, and the original one that was in it. So I think that'll make a difference. So I'm expecting that we're going to be really ramping up and doing more vaccine in the fall.
Right.
And
okay.
I think it's really knowing that the schools are getting used to the having the kids there. And so I think it's thinking about whether you want to send your child with a mask. Make sure you don't send your children to school. That's when they're sick. That's something we all can do. So lots to think about there. It's a good question.
Mm-hmm. And there's another one sort of, and I think you've almost answered the question, but they're asking about what's the latest for vaccinations for kids under 5. These people have a toddler who will be going to school in the fall as well. Is it safe for her to do so? And do you think the vaccines will be ready by then? You've kind of answered that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Part of it. I think you really need to think for the little ones about really the social experience and everything. So what we know right now is Moderna has one that's ready. This close to being ready for the under fives, expecting that Health Canada will be reviewing it. We may know by end of June, early July. And then the question is production of the vaccine. So we're really hoping for end of September, or sorry, end of August, early September, but just stay. We've had so many hopes and then they got sort of put down a little bit. So that's where we are now. So hopefully, yes, we'll have something for the little ones.
Okay. I'm going to combine two other questions here. They're kind of talking about the same thing. They're asking, how do you feel about the summer going as when it comes to the pandemic? And sort of an adjunct question to that, do you have any concerns about fairs? If we go to a larger area event like that, what would you suggest we do to keep ourselves safe?
Yeah. So our numbers are really falling off. Wastewater is going back down again, which is really important. And that's exactly what happened with the COVID experience over the last 2 years. So I'm hoping there's going to be less. And in large part, that's due to the behavior of people. People are outside more. There's not as much meeting together in bigger groups inside. So there's not as much opportunity for the virus to spread. So that I think that the summer is the time to be out in nature, be physically active, because I think that those are some things that we've missed while we've been inside over the winter. So really encourage people to get out, enjoy this area with the lakes and the rivers and the trails and just you know, walking around your neighborhood and enjoying the leaves, the green and everything. I think it's really important to be out and about. And fairs are mostly outside. So I think that when you're out going to a fair, you know the basic things. Like, so avoid big crowds, avoid being squished in with people. It's not fun anyway. If you're going to go inside, then slip your mask on. That's going to give you more protection. Keep the 2 meters away from people. I still, when I'm not out very much, but I, when I was in the pharmacy, people are naturally moving around each other. And it's like we all know the 2 meters distance. So I think, think about going to the fairs because it's a fun thing to do. And we need fun in our lives right now. And think about the precautions with mask use. Everyone needs to make sure they don't go to a fair if they're sick, if they have cold-like symptoms, to stay home. That will help everybody. But yes, please enjoy life now.
Yeah. Another question I think you've almost answered as well, too. It was about what are some of the best safe summer activities for families who may have someone who is more at risk from COVID? And you have kind of mentioned getting out and enjoy that summer.
Most infections is spread is with social gatherings and people are together without masks on and not everyone is vaccinated. So I think if you've got someone who's really immune compromised, then please think it out in terms of who's going to be there, where it's going to be. Outside is much better, still the distance. If someone is really vulnerable, then everyone can be wearing masks. Like we know the levels of protection that we can put in place. So I think the big thing is just to plan it out and plan it out for success. Mm-hmm. And plan it and do it.
Yes, exactly. Get outside. Nothing like a single person kayak or something like that to be able to, keep your social distance more or less and get out and enjoy the weather.
That's good.
Final question for today. When will fourth shots be opened up for other age groups?
Yeah, so probably not. The reason that Dr. Kieran Moore implemented that was concern about the severity of the infection among older people. And because we know that the 3 doses of vaccine are still very good against preventing serious disease in the under 60 age group, and even in the 60s, 70s, and 80s somewhat. But if you have underlying health conditions and you get COVID, then it's more severe and it affects those other conditions, whether it's Parkinson's disease or a stroke or you've had a transplant or something. So he really was trying to make sure that we're preventing serious disease, which happens among older people. And we know that the vast all of our deaths but one, I think, have been in people over the age of 60, and the hospitalizations are much higher in that age group, and ICU visits and everything. So the purpose was to prevent serious disease, and we know that people over age of 60 have serious disease, or if you're immune compromised, then 18 plus can get the vaccine. So I think that was the intention for it, because we wanted to make sure that the healthcare system could be maintained to be able to provide care to everyone and that we reduce serious infection. And so I don't think that we'll be expanding that to other people. I think the third dose is still doing a good job of protecting people who are under the age of 60. The fall is a little bit different though. And I think that if we do have the vaccine with both the strain that we have right now and it plus Omicron, I think that's going to be really, really helpful. And looking forward to offering that to people then.
Yeah. Do you think that will be available as of this fall then? Almost like we have
fall. That's the hope.
Yeah. Our flu.
That's the hope.
So flu shots.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's how to think of it. Because it's just before the respiratory season starts.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So they should be available as early as this fall then? Yeah.
We hope so.
Yeah. Okay. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Dr. Yeah. Stewart, that's the questions that we had. And we thank our listeners, by the way, for sending those in as well. And that wraps up your show. Thank you so much for being with us. And if you have a celebration for the the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit in July. I hope that you are there to enjoy it all. I know that, you know, there's talk of retirement at some point, but I think you'll still be around for a party if there is one.
Oh, I'll be around for a party.
Yeah, very good. After all that you've done, we thank you so much for being with us again today. And I know we're going to talk again. Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
All right. That is Dr. Paula Stewart, Medical Officer of Health for the Leeds, Grenville, and Lanark District Health Unit. That does our show In Focus. And it's Brian Perkin with you today. Don't forget you can pick up all of these interviews on our website as well, our new website for Lake 88 called lanarkleadstoday.ca.
In Focus on Lake 88. To hear today's program online or to listen to any of our previous In Focus interviews, visit our website at lake88.ca.
In Focus on Lake 88 was brought to you by Perth Chiropractic in the Perth Family Health Center, 33 Lewis Street in Perth.